Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
If you're an Alabama fan, I've got what passes for bad news. Here's the short version. It's really good to be you. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday, and I hope everybody's had a glorious week, all right? We got about 2 hours of college football conversation today, and then we're done for the day, for the week, et cetera. And I want everybody, I hope you just have a fantastic weekend. You do a little of this. You know, exhale a little bit. It's the weekend, and good for everybody. But I said, if you're an Alabama fan, I've got what passes for bad news. Because, you know, they're one of those programs where, you know, the phrase I've used before is Nerf pain. Alabama's pain is normally Nerf pain. Dadgummit! We went 10-2, clutched the pearls, and we're having to play in a Citrus Bowl. Ah! Do you realize that's their Thelma and Louise season? 10-2, Citrus Bowl. So I have what passes for bad news for Bama fans. I got an email from a guy, and I've told y'all before, I don't go on message boards. So I understand that when you're on message boards, you adopt a name that has some sort of fun play off of your school or the mascot or whatever. I don't go on message boards. I go to sites that have message boards, like 24/7. They got message boards, right? Rivals got message boards. All kinds of places got message boards. UGASports.com got message boards. But I go there for the other stuff. But I got an email from a guy who I guess is a Bama fan, RTR Jackson. You know what RTR is, right? Roll Tide Roll. Yeah, Roll Tide Roll Jackson. And I don't know if Jackson is his first name. It's the South. I don't know if it's his first name. I don't know if it's the last name. I don't care. But for my emailer, RTR Jackson, the answer is no. And I'm going to tell you something because RTR Jackson even clarified something for me. And my response was still no. I got an email earlier this week, and I went back and forth with him a couple. I figured, you know, somebody sends a tweet, you can do that like as you're stepping onto the plane, you're working your thumbs, you know. You can do that almost as a dismissive act. Somebody takes time to send an email, I will respect your time. I will read the email. In some cases, I'll respond. Sometimes people just want to tell me. They don't ask a question. You know, you're an idiot. You said XYZ. Send. And I'm like, okay, they didn't ask anything of me. They just stated that. And so I just move on. But RTR Jackson asked me a question. He said, as bad as the Jacksonville Jaguars have been, couldn't last year's Bama team beat them? And I wrote back, thought about it, thought about the rosters, thought about how the season unfolded, thought about coaching, went back to my email, wrote, no, send. That was it. Really thought about it. And I mean, I was going to sit down, devote some time, and every avenue I started going down to compare these rosters, if there's like 15 steps I could have taken, I got a half step. In fact, I didn't even go down that street. I just like peeked down the alley. I was like, nah, I'm good. And so my deep dive into this lasted about a minute and a half. No, send. And I thought it was over. RTR Jackson, he writes back, No, this is where he clarified. No, I was saying last year before they get Trevor Lawrence. I was like, oh, okay, now I understand. I wrote, no, send. As bad as the Jags have been, or the Jets, or any NFL team, any year. No. Last season's national championship Alabama team, nor any national championship from team from any season, would not have beaten whatever pro team has the first overall draft pick. And for about 18 different reasons. And there are times when we're just looking to make the point, right? And so I was like, 18 different reasons. Folks, I identified 18 different reasons that Jacksonville would beat Alabama by about 4 touchdowns. And when I say 18, I mean because I looked at the starting 22 for each of the teams. And I checked 18 of those boxes for the Jags. How can you do that? We got all Americans. Uh-huh. And Devonta Smith? All right, I may roll with him. Najee? I'm not kidding, folks. I went spot by spot. We got Mac Jones. Really? The Jags have Gardner Minshew. He led NCAA Division I in passing yards. Did Mac Jones? Do you know who their backup is? All ACC quarterback Mike Lennon, who's a third-round draft choice and is now an 8-year veteran. Who's carrying the football? Oh, I don't know. Who's catching the football? Oh, I don't know. Heard any of these names? Terry Godwin, DJ Shark, Chris Conley, D.D. Westbrook. Pretty good college players. All of those guys, except for Devonta. And I give you that check. Every one of those guys. Can you imagine you're facing a college team and you look across the line of scrimmage and they're going 4 wide. And it's Terry Godwin, DJ Shark, Chris Conley, D.D. Westbrook. If a college team came out 4 wide and those were the 4, it's the Senior Bowl, okay? That's the only way. It's like the North roster in Mobile. You see how this continues to extrapolate out. It doesn't matter which position on the – with just a couple of exceptions. It doesn't matter which position on the field you go to. I'm dealing with a 26-year-old grown man. You've got a 19-year-old first-team All-SEC player. Bully for you. And when you're playing other kids that are still growing into their bodies, yeah. You not only win almost every Saturday, a lot of Saturdays, if your coach chose to, I mean, just open a can on Missouri, yeah, he could do it. He chooses not to. Now, I'll give Nick Saban credit for another adjustment that nobody ever talks about. I brought this up a couple of times because I think it was the ultimate example. They're playing South Carolina at home in 09, I think, and they're up by, it was like 20-7 or 20-9 or something. It was 2 full scores, and even a 2-point conversion wasn't going to help you. And it was the second half against South Carolina, and Nick Saban's like, we ain't passing the ball anymore. Shut it down. And I guess it would have been McElwain at that point. I think. He's like, shut it down. They went Wildcat. I asked Drew DeArmond about this a couple of months ago. He was like, oh, yeah, I remember that night. And it was like, it might have been like 20-9 or something. But it was over, and all Nick Saban did was let the air out of the ball, snap it on 3. Nick Saban has changed. He's like, points aplenty. Let's light it up a little bit because, A, that's how you win now. Just win. Like, we're going to get a dub instead of an L. The ultimate out. That's all. Just give me a win. But beyond that, pretty points, style points, points with the committee. However, there is a correlation to the actual points. And Nick Saban, he's smart enough. He knows that. Which is not just the fact that, oh, hey, we got to improve the offense now so we can win. Nick Saban knows not just what wins on Saturdays, but what wins titles. Even Nick Saban, he looks across the line of scrimmage. He's like, yeah, we got this done. We've beaten Missouri. Call them off. We've beaten Auburn. Call them off. There are coaches who have exceptions. Like, I have been told that Kirby Smart specifically, he despises Dan Mullen, Gus Malzahn, and Jeremy Pruitt. Well, two of those are gone. Like, I don't know. Dan, you covered the team. You don't have to say anything. No comment. Have you ever heard any comments about Kirby's attitude towards any of those three?
Not until I got on this show.
Okay. I'm very confident that's true. And after what happened in 17 and Jordan Hare, what's Kirby done every single time he faces Gus? Hey, take this one out the door with you, Gus. Even if it hadn't been successful. What were they up, 3 touchdowns in the SEC title
game?
Yeah,
that's where I was going.
And at the end, Kirby was like, oh, well, we were throwing it because if they were to come back and get 2-point conversions and 2 onside kicks, and we just wanted to make a 4-score game or whatever it was. There are, because they're just people, okay? And there are, there. If you're an insurance salesman, there's another insurance salesman you don't like. If you work at Burger King, there's somebody at Domino's you don't like. That's just how it is in any competitive industry. And so there are times where I'm watching a game and I'm like, here it comes, because I know those coaches' histories. There, in fact, Dabo, who is one of the best people I've ever met in my life, much less in this industry, go look a couple of years ago. He put a number on Florida State, and there was a reason for it. All right? So even Mack Brown? Mack Brown will slice your throat, and you never even know what happened. And you're like, what happened? I got a stain on my shirt. And Mack's like, I don't know, buddy. Nick Saban, if he wanted to, he could open a can every single Saturday. And he normally does not. It kind of turns out the way it turns out sometimes. If they play, I'll say, Arkansas, and they win by 5 touchdowns, it just kind of turns out that way. Not because Nick Saban's going, I hate Sam Pittman. That's how unbelievably all-time great this program is right now. In fact, I've said it's the best. It is the number one college football dynasty in the history of the sport since Princeton and Rutgers started playing 160 years ago or however long. Actually, 162 years ago. At the most dominant dynasty in the history of the program, in the history of the sport right now, and they would lose by 4 touchdowns to the Jags. So I appreciate the question. I even appreciate the clarification from, who was that again? RTR Jackson. But the answer is still no.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
You always have a selling point, whether you're the worst program, the best program, anywhere in between. And look, for Georgia, it's quite simple. It's like, hey, we have everything but this. So in other words, we have everything but you.
John Garcia Jr. from Sports Illustrated. I want to respect that man. I didn't say junior yesterday. John Garcia Jr. from Sports Illustrated. Normally, I'm asking about this high school kid and that, and he said, there may be a JUCO kid or two that teams are after, but yeah, the high schools have kind of been wrung dry, and then, of course, everybody's in the portal. I was asking him about Georgia coach Kirby Smart, and not how does he keep getting quarterbacks. Why do quarterbacks keep saying yes? A slight difference. Because you can say, well, how do they keep getting these guys? Well, facilities, and we win and all that. And he's like, no, he's got the perfect pitch. And I've been told this, a good friend of mine, Brandon Adams, who actually was producer of the show earlier. He was the first producer way back in the day. And then he went on to Dog Nation with SEC Country. Yeah, and et cetera. So I asked him, and I mentioned this a couple of days ago, as a matter of fact, that there's always a pitch. It doesn't matter whether we've got five quarterbacks or we have no quarterbacks. There's always a pitch. And I was talking about a recruiting class of Georgia. Actually, it was the Jake Fromm class. And how the recruiter in Tuscaloosa had been telling Jake Fromm, because he was a Bama commit, wasn't he? Yeah. Everything that Kirby had been telling him about Tuscaloosa, like he's in Athens going, yeah, forget all that. This is really where you want to graduate from. This is really where the fans are going to love you. And so it's just one of those odd natures of recruiting there. But he said that we have everything but you. That is the pitch. Oh, and I know we've got these other four-star and five-star quarterbacks, but we don't have you. And you see all the linemen and all the receivers and all the corners and all the outside backers and all the punters and all the long snappers and all the everybody. We don't have you. Kids keep saying yes. They keep accepting the offer to go stand in line and hopefully get their shot in Athens. Now, it also was turning out a lot like almost every other major program where there's a log jam. And by the way, kids today, a log jam to some kids is two. Well, I got to get on out of here. Well, okay. Was it Master Teague? Trey Sermon. Because Trey Sermon was the transfer, yeah. Master Teague was already there and had the Achilles issue. Trey Sermon, he was like, I'm going to be behind Kennedy Brooks. I'm transferring. And then Kennedy Brooks sat out the season. Dan Matthews, how are you?
You know, and that's the thing, too, is I think that a lot of people look at Georgia's quarterback situation and how it's handled kind of like the way that LSU was in basically Siberia for years. And I would point, though, to LSU is it was just the product was not as good. Nothing against Danny Etling. Danny Etling is not what Jake Fromm is. Danny Etling is not who even Carson Beck is as a guy who's going to be probably at the end of the spring out of Athens. Yeah. So the thing is, with the way that Georgia has handled their quarterback situation, is probably the only one that you can look at with Kirby and say, wow, hey, bud, you missed on that one, is the Justin Fields situation. Because I think in hindsight 2020, and I think if he could jump in the DeLorean with Doc Brown, he would go back to 2018 and say, hey, you know what? I want to see what this guy can do, because probably our upside is a lot higher with this guy than with the guy that just took us to the SEC championship game and also close to winning a national title. So as long as you have the top tier guys there, Chuck, the law of averages tell you somebody will pop. Somebody will finally get it going. And I think the other part of it as well is another notch against LSU at the time was you had no development. You had the coaching was poor at that position. You were running an offense that nobody could succeed in really at the level that you needed at the time. And it wasn't until Ed Orgeron finally got that right with Steve Ensminger and also with Joe Brady that finally you start to get the Finleys to say yes to you, the Max Johnsons to say yes to you, the Nussmeyers now to say yes to you to come play at your school, because they saw Joe Burrow play the position and they said, huh, that guy can do that. Nothing against that guy, but I feel like I could be just as good as him, maybe even better. I'm going to go there. Kirby can get that, and he can get it as soon as this year with JT Daniels.
Miles Brennan, there doesn't have to be a big drop-off as far as, hey, we're not in the passing business anymore. He's not going to be Joe Burrow, and nobody would ever expect it or even have a conversation about it. But it doesn't have to be, well, Burrow left and took the passing game with him. Absolutely agree with that, as LSU is looking like everybody else to transition to the 2021 season.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Our next guest, he's a champion. And I mean, he's kind of a champion twice over the last several months, and had a shot at a third one. I can't believe I'm saying this, but somebody who grew up and has been a Tampa pro sports fan his entire life, it's good to be him. Heath Klein, how you doing, brother?
Hey, Chuck, what's going on, man?
Doing good. Heath Klein from 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina. We are going to talk Gamecocks, but can I talk about your life as a Tampa sports fan?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of fun. You know, the crazy thing is the Bucks don't win playoff games, but when they do, they win the Super Bowl. That's kind of how it works. So you just have to space them out by, you know, 18 years apart. But when they go, they go for real.
And so Lightning, Stanley Cup, Rays in the World Series – Tampa wins a Super Bowl, and all that happens in Tampa in like 5 months.
Well, and
I gotta say, I'm jealous because my city started all of those things before yours, and you've got to go back to like Steelers, you know, Pirates in 79, Jets, Mets in 69. I mean, it's good to be Tampa.
It is, and now you've got teams just trying to get in on the action, Chuck. You know, Tampa natives are used to Canadians coming down in the winter months. We're not used to their sports teams coming down. So you've got the Raptors playing in Tampa right now. You've got the Blue Jays going to be playing in Tampa. Everybody's trying to draft off of Tampa's heat right now.
All right, let's talk South Carolina. And I'm not being funny here, but Shane Beamer now does have the coaching staff squared away, solidified, et cetera. Now that all that's done, and we believe it'll stay in place, just what's your general overview of the staff he's put together the second or third time now?
It's kind of a mystery box. I mean, there's no other way to put it. There's some real questions as to what they're going to do offensively. You know, you've got a coordinator in Marcus Satterfield who comes from an NFL assistant coaching role where he was not running an offense. It hasn't been running an offense on the FBS level for the last 6 years. So we know that some of what he saw with the Panthers is likely to be part of what they do, the Joe Brady influence in the passing game. We know that Shane Beamer's planning on having some of the things he's learned from Lincoln Riley go into it too. And before this, before all of it, he was running an offense at Temple that was more of a power-based offense. So, you know, stir that all up in a jar and then see what comes out, I guess. The one thing we do know is that they have a 1,000-yard rusher returning in Kevin Harris and another kid at Marshawn Lloyd they're really excited about. So it's pretty hard to imagine, based on personnel, that the initial offense we see won't have a heavy ground element to it. But what does the passing game look like is completely a mystery to everybody as to, you know, what they'll try to do and how quickly they'll try to do it. And on top of that, you also have questions at the quarterback spot. You know, Luke Doty has a lot of athletic ability, but only started a couple of games. And then you've got a kid in Jason Brown they brought in from St. Francis to the FCS that has a really good physical tools to be a passer, but doesn't even be a throw to. So, yeah, it's a mystery on that side. Defensive side, at least with Clayton White, you know, you can look at what he did at Kentucky, or Western Kentucky, and have a little better idea kind of what they're thinking over there. But offense, man, it's anybody's guess.
For the quarterback spot, it was a strange situation last year because, you and I have talked about this, and we were texting off air. The relationship between who was going to be the returning starter, I thought, and Helinski, and the offensive coordinator in Bobo, and then when he brings in his own transfer from Colorado State, I mean, that was kind of writing on the wall. But when Bobo left, I've had South Carolina fans zero surprise that both Bobo and Helinski left, that there were no real plans for Helinski, and the feeling was that he was never going to be able to really anchor inside that program. It's just a really strange odyssey for Ryan Helinski in my eyes.
Yeah, it is, and I feel bad for him just in the sense that look, being a freshman is tough enough. Then you get unexpectedly stuck in the role of being a starter in the SEC second game of your season because your starting quarterback that was supposed to play, you kind of learned behind for a year, got hurt in the first game. So you wind up having to start. You play through injuries, multiple injuries along the way. You definitely were not playing for a very effective offensive coordinator. South Carolina was running basically nothing by the end of the year other than just throw it sideways and hope a guy can get 3 yards. Yep. And even that wasn't doing much. For a lot of reasons, he really did not have a very effective developing first year. And then he also moved across the country with his family. For those who don't know, his brother had taken his own life, and that was a big part of the reason why the family wanted a fresh start on the East Coast. But a lot came with that. And he's going to Northwestern now, and I don't know whether or not his family's going to follow him up there and whether or not he'll be expected to be as involved publicly as kind of a face of their efforts with mm-hmm. trying to fight suicide. We'll see if a fresh start works out for him. I just think a lot of things came together for it just not really work out the way it ideally would have for him or for them at South Carolina.
Okay, I don't know that I should be surprised about this, but when I look at, we were sketching out what could happen in 2021 for each program, and I'm looking at South Carolina, I'm like, Ortre Smith is still there? Confirmed that Ortre Smith is still there, and what is he now versus what maybe we were all thinking he could be when he was a freshman? He came in with Shai Smith and the rest of that group.
Yeah, we really don't know, Chuck. Ortre Smith, for those who haven't seen him play in a long time, is a longer receiver. He's not a blazer, but he's got good enough ability to get open. But where he was going to make plays was the length against the defensive back, that he can go up and get it. And showed some real nice signs freshman year, but had a condition where his kneecap was basically subluxing, and so they had to fix it. And he has just never quite gotten right, it seems, since mm-hmm. then. Well, then this past year, supposedly he was physically okay, but was one of the players that opted with COVID to not play last year. So, yeah, he is still around and is expected to play as of now for this year. And so, by the way, is Rodriguez Davis. Rodriguez Davis has been around through the entire Muschamp tenure. And
I forgot about him.
Stay healthy. But they always have thought if he could stay healthy, he could be a nice player. So they have two guys that have, between them, probably played maybe a season and a half of actual football, but have been on the roster forever. And if either one of them could stay healthy, then they still might be able to actually help.
All right. Now, this is surprising to me. You mentioned the quarterback who's transferring in from St. Francis. That kid, if you think, how good can he be? Heath, I looked. I think he was a 3-star prospect coming out of high school, and he chose St. Francis anyway. But it's not just him. He's got a big old teammate coming as well, E.J. Jenkins, a 6'8" receiver.
Yeah, he's 6'8" and a big guy, not just tall, but also has some bulk to him. And they think of the two, he might be the more impact guy right away. Obviously, the quarterback, we'll have to see how that battle plays out. But as thin as they are at wide receiver, naturally the assumption would be he'd have great timing with Brown if he winds up being the quarterback. But even if Brown's not the quarterback, they just think that guy could really help them. Game experience, big physique, very different than some of the other players they've got coming back. So, yeah, Jenkins is a guy, unless he is just a total plotter that cannot get open against SEC DBs at all, I think he's going to be a pretty important factor for them.
What's the general feel about Marshawn Lloyd now, a full year removed from his injury?
Everything you hear is good. They were super excited about him, and then kind of as part of the theme of Gamecock fans just cannot have anything nice last year, then first practice everybody's yeah. raving, and second practice was, oh, hey, his ACL is gone. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
So the word has been positive, though, on the recovery, and then the word on the surgery was that sometimes you have an ACL tear and sometimes you have a lot more, and supposedly for him it was a relatively clean affair, and so they're very optimistic that he'll be ready to go for this year.
All right, well, let's wrap it up with the facilities and the transfer portal then. Transfer portal, the phrase I saw was plenty of flexibility to still work the portal probably at the end of May when kids decide that next round comes. Because the portal, have you noticed, Heath, since signing day, it's been pretty quiet as far as kids jumping in at least. I think everybody sort of realized, well, wait a minute, scholarships are valuable. Maybe I'll keep mine. But South Carolina is going to add maybe, one, two, three transfers maybe at the end of May or sometime during summer?
Yeah, I certainly think they'll keep looking. The biggest thing now is, okay, get through your spring, see where you are, see if you have injuries, and just evaluate. And then you can kind of take stock and say, okay, we got to get another backer. You look at what they did with a lot of the transfers they've taken so far, and most of them have been kids like Amarion Brown from Georgia Tech. Mm-hmm. That you're not just taking him for 2021. You're taking him as a guy that you think is going to be there for several years. I think the next wave of transfers is going to be more likely to be, okay, we literally have got to patch the tire at this spot and this spot. Let's take a guy if we can with long-term potential, but if not, let's take that guy that can just get us through 2021, and we'll try and fix it with high school kids in the next year or two as we can. So I think that's where things stand for them next. They just used their 25th scholarship literally earlier this week on a defensive back from Assumption College.
So
you got a D2 kid.
Yeah.
So you got two FCS kids and a D2 kid. You got kids from Georgia Tech, from Georgia State, and from Georgia Southern. So they still need a Georgia transfer to complete the set there. But it's been an interesting group to put together. I think a lot of people were expecting it was going to be big names, but instead they've really kind of, I think, focused on some specific kids that they think are maybe overlooked that can really help them. And we'll see if they're right. It's going to be a really intriguing group to see come together this year.
I did a Memphis game several years ago where I kind of made the folks in the athletic department there not mad, but they're like, yeah, don't do that. It makes the school sound bad. Because I talked about their roster before, you know, pregame. I talked about their roster kind of being Ellis Island because there was a player from Wisconsin, two from Miami, one from Auburn. I was like, you know, if you're tired, huddled masses, you go to Memphis, you can play. That's everybody's roster now. Like what I was pointing out about a basically 13th grade sort of program in Memphis with the Tigers, that's what everybody does. Wake Forest does that now.
Yeah, I do think, though, we're seeing a shift. I mean, you look at between what's going on with the expected liberalization of the transfer rule here in the next few months, where it's going to be no sitting out, you transfer once without a problem. Between that, how many classes are being put together now entirely over Zoom, and heck, it's going to be halfway through this year before anybody can do any visits. If then, we don't know. I just think there's going to be so much transferring in the next year or two. Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of programs, unless you're at Alabama or at Ohio State, that can just, you know, cream of the crop of the high school kids. Why would you take a chance on a 3-star when you could take a chance on another 3-star that's already gotten 2 years of strength work, 2 years of eating on the college level and developing and filling out? You have a lot better idea. I honestly think we all better get used to, especially in the short term, the idea that, you know, half your classes are going to be really almost a lingering 3-year cycle before we find out who really played where.
All right, last thing, and this is sort of a 2-part question. One of it is just curious on my part. The facilities, heard a lot of talk about it. Will Muschamp, my curiosity, did the media and our fans or whoever in Columbia catch on to how much importance Will? He kept using that phrase game changer, and I was like, I don't think that's smart for a coach to label that him. Let other people label how this is going to change everything, because if it doesn't, everybody's going to look at you and say, wait a minute, you told us if we spent $70 million that you could win the East, for instance. I didn't think it was a good idea for Will to keep harping on it the way he did. Game changer, game changer. But talk about the facilities themselves, because, my gosh, they're about as nice as you're going to find anywhere, including Oregon or Bama or anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything you want. They've got a few gimmicks in there. They didn't go with Clemson with the slide and the mini golf course. They didn't do as much of that, but they got a barbershop in there. They've got a recording studio in there. So, you know, if Shane Beamer or anybody wants to make a rap album in their spare time, they could do that. It's very well done. It certainly simplifies things for them. They were kind of scattered on different places on campus. It's all in one spot. The practice fields are right there. So, yeah, it's a great setup. The problem for them is that, of course, just as they got it up and running and it was supposed to make a big deal in recruiting for the next 2 or 3 years, no one's allowed on campus anymore. So at some point here, it might actually turn out to be a little bit more of what they had hoped it would be for the recruiting side of things. I mean, they can send all the virtual tours of it out you want, but I think it makes a little more impact if you're in the building. But yeah, when it comes to resources, Spurrier was able to do so much with what was between his ears that he just didn't care about that kind of stuff. Will came in, and things like the recruiting infrastructure with analysts and all that kind of thing that is modernizing college football, he's done all that. Now it's up to Shane Beamer to have more success with what Will Muschamp did to actually bring the program into what college football is at this point with regards to structure in a way Spurrier was never going to.
All right, so I guess maybe if Ortre wants to release a gospel album or whatever, he's got the facility there to do it. All right, well, that's good stuff, Heath. Did y'all pay attention to the game changer comments and where he kept setting that bar for it, though?
Honestly, that wasn't that big a deal to the fans, just because everybody loves hearing about the facilities and everything else. But the fans are always on one thing, either win or show me the recruits. And the big thing with Muschamp was, if you want to talk about a comment he made that hurt him, at the press conference when he was introduced, he talked about I could sell ice to Eskimos and, you know, look at my wife and how good a recruiter I am, which every coach in the world loves to say. But they held those things to him about, okay, well, if you could sell ice to Eskimos, how come your class looks exactly like Spurrier's class is in the bottom part of the teens? You know, where's my top five class? Where's my top 10 class? Where's my Eskimos? And then fans were like, oh, so we were the Eskimos. Oh, oops.
Yep. And that's why he is now a defensive analyst, I believe. Heath, great stuff, brother, as always. Thank you for your time today.
Anytime, Chuck.
All right, Heath Klein from 107.5 The Game.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. I need to remind a fan base, this time my own, of what wins games. What wins games? I will skip to the end of this conversation. I don't believe in magic shirts. I don't believe in magic helmets or magic pants. I believe in winning the line of scrimmage and not turning it over. And that's what you should believe in as well. Much speculation about what changes Auburn may have when it comes to their either uniforms or aesthetics. I'll address this thoroughly, exhaustively, and I'll do it right now. None. That is the short version of this. I've watched Auburn football. I was raised a Bama fan. In fact, my senior year when I decided I'm going to Auburn, had partial scholarship, but so I'm going to Auburn, and free school, a small amount of free schooling, by the way. I had a full ride to Troy. Every I was like, how much does this cost? They said, nothing for you. I was like, And remember, I was going to be the first member of my immediate family to graduate from a four-year college. And my dad, who grew up in Castleberry, Alabama, picking cotton for 2.5 cents a pound at age 5, okay? He didn't graduate from college. He's sitting in the chair next to me, and the guy's name was Mr. Dixon. That's all I remember. And he's like, so we're prepared to offer you this. And I slid it right. I was a smarmy, arrogant, I'll leave out the rest, 18-year-old kid. I was like, yep, well, I'm not sure. And I slid it right back across the desk. My dad kicked him out of his own office. It was like, would you excuse us, please? I'd like to talk to my son. So anyway, I grew up a Bama fan, but I mean, I've always paid attention to Auburn the same way I paid attention to Florida State and Arkansas and Clemson and Michigan and everybody else. And I can tell you, without even going to look this up, Auburn's uniforms, they ain't changing. And I don't care if they brought the coach down from the blue field or not. Now, on a side note, Auburn is an ag school, and as long as that's true, they're playing on real grass. They're not playing on plastic grass. So, Understand that that's the case, and you're not going to paint an entire field blue or orange or anything else every week before the game. As I am recalling, without going online and Googling my computer or anything else, here is about as exotic as Auburn has gotten over the years. And when I say over the years, I mean from when I was in like second grade and the first time. No, I got to take that back. I was a couple of months shy of turning three. And the first football game I ever went to, first football game of any kind I went to was at Clemson. It was Auburn at Clemson. Auburn beat them 44-0. The uniforms that Auburn wore that day, October 10th, I think, 1970, they look a whole lot like the uniforms Auburn wore this past season, except there was no Under Armour or Nike or anything on there. And it was those big, wide, like mesh nylon jerseys. But otherwise, Auburn's jerseys, their uniforms have not changed. Here is about as radical as I can recall. Instead of a white face mask, maybe an orange one. Instead of an orange face mask, now we're going to use a blue one. I can't remember Auburn ever having a gray face mask, but I also don't very much care about it because a face mask doesn't win a game. They had a coach before Pat Dye who was slightly obsessed with orange. He had the orange face mask. He had orange belts for the uniforms. And against Georgia in, this would have been 80, I think, they warmed up in the traditional home uniforms when the locker room came out in orange jerseys. Guess what? Can we go all the way back to the beginning of this? I don't believe in magic shirts. I believe in winning the line of scrimmage and not turning the ball over because that's how you win games. I've talked about this ever so often, about once a year it comes up with this Georgia fan. Oh, blackout game, and was it 2007 against Auburn? I think it was. That blackout game, those boys, black jerseys, they did the job. I was like, you were losing in the middle of the third quarter. So does it take 2.5 hours for the magic of the shirt to kick in? Because you were losing in the third quarter. And you know why you were losing up to that point? Because for the first 2.5 quarters, Auburn blocked better, tackled better, ran the ball better, threw the ball better, caught the ball better, kicked better, coached better, long snap, did everything better, had a better pregame meal. Do you know what Georgia did the final quarter and a half? All of that stuff better than Auburn. Way better than Auburn, and made huge plays, and it wasn't the shirts. And the bigger picture is, if you're wanting a special uniform, all right, a one-time uniform, a uniform overhaul, whatever. If you just want it because you don't like your unis, you think they're ugly, whatever, rock on. I saw Auburn get cray about, I don't know, 10, 12 years. Well, it would have been 2007. It would have had to have been. The 50th anniversary of the 1957 National Championship game, it was early in the season. They had a home game, I think, against Vanderbilt. And they came out with no logo on the side of the helmet. That was essentially the – do you know why they did that? To commemorate the 50th anniversary of the national championship team. It was half a century, and all they had to do was peel the logo off the side of the helmet. So, no, Auburn hasn't exactly been Oregon. If you're thinking there's something more to be had from a uniform change, that's where I jump off the bus, all right? If Auburn runs out of the tunnel September 4th onto a bright orange field, I will concede the point. I don't believe it happens.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.